Hello, all you ladies, gentlemen, werewolves, vampires, ghouls, goblins, and ghosts out there. This is episode 77 of Add This to Your List.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is not our spooky episode, but it is Halloween week as we record this. So you have to deal with a little more horror for just a little bit longer.
Mm-hmm.
How are you guys?
Good.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm talking to my two fabulous co-hosts, Fumi Sumano and Mark Jay Parker, and I am Tom Chuba.
Hey, hey. Halloween week.
Yeah, are you guys doing anything for Halloween? Are you dressing up?
You know what? I actually am dressing up this year, and I rarely dress up for Halloween anymore.
Yes.
But I decided after going to this awesome little pop-up Spirit Halloween store right in town, we could walk right there, I decided to be Archie from Riverdale.
Oh, cute.
Oh,
you have to take a picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have a great jacket that I'm like, oh, I'm going to wear this, like, in real life, like, normally. So I got that and the red hairspray. So there you go. Are you guys going to dress up or anything?
No.
Yeah.
Mm-mm. No, I'm not going to dress up, but Jeff and I are going to go to my friend Kevin and Randy's house because they live in a town called Watertown, which is about 25 minutes from here where I used to live, actually.
Right.
Which is, like, super quintessential New England. Mm. And where Jeff and I live in a condo complex on, like, a south tip of a lake, which is, like, kind of remote and off the beaten path from the rest of Danbury, mm-hmm. we don't get trick-or-treaters, so Halloween doesn't feel like Halloween.
Yep.
So their town, Kevin and Randy's town, they get, like, hundreds of trick-or-treaters. They go through, like, 9 BJ's bags of candy every year, like, bulk size.
Dang.
They do, like, massive blow-ups, like Halloween blow-ups in front of their house, and they have, like, a animatronic Michael Myers.
Ooh.
So we're like, you know what? We're going to go.
That's
we're gonna
fun.
Go
that's
this
so
year.
Fun. That's so funny, Tom. I'm going to be doing a similar thing because Cece and Mark, you guys have heard their voices before on this podcast. They just got a house. They bought a house recently in Ossining, elsewhere in Westchester. So we're going to go and kind of help them with their first, like, set of trick-or-treaters, you know?
They'll probably have really good... A bunch of trick-or-treaters, right? I would imagine Westchester's like a good
Totally.
Area.
Oh, yeah. And it's a big trick-or-treating neighborhood, and their house is awesome and very old. So it'll be a fun little visit. So, yeah. What are you going to do, Foom? Do you have any Halloween plans?
Yeah. Every year, West Hollywood does an intense Halloween parade. It's pretty big. It's like thousands of people show up. So I'll probably go do that for a little bit, and then I'll escape and spend the rest of the night in the comfort of my house.
Nice.
Nice. Watching some scary movies.
Yeah,
yeah. Maybe. There's a couple of good ones out right now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, as we said, this isn't our Halloween episode. Hopefully you've listened to that already because that was the previous episode.
Mm-hmm.
But we are gonna do our typical housekeeping and headlines, and then we are going to get into our list, our weekly list, and then we're gonna wrap it up with a little bit of a discussion of true real life horror stories that haven't yet been made into a film, TV show, or miniseries that we think could actually do kind of well on a big or small screen. We'll give you that little bit of a treat, and that'll be our episode. But let's get into it, guys. Housekeeping and headlines. Mm-hmm. Housekeeping, Mark, seems like you've got something. What do you want to tell us?
Yeah, I know it's a couple weeks old. We've all heard by now, but I just wanted to give him a little shout-out because we talked earlier this year about how Robert Pattinson is officially playing the new Batman. We talked about it, I guess that was earlier this summer, I guess, when it was announced.
Yep.
And so more casting news with that new Batman movie. As we've heard, Zoe Kravitz will be Catwoman, and Paul Dano. It's funny because I don't know if she listens to this podcast, but I interned with his sister years ago at Fox Searchlight, so I should know this.
Oh.
I'm Facebook friends with her. Hi, Sarah. But I don't know how to say her last name. But let's just say Dano. Paul Dano and Zoe Kravitz are joining as the villains of Batman, and I think that is great casting. I think Paul Dano is an awesome actor and is overdue for awards. And I think Zoe Kravitz is a perfect Catwoman. What do you guys think?
That sounds cool.
Yeah, I'm here for Zoe.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right? I feel like this might be like, is this like the hippest Batman movie ever with these three like cool, edgy actors, you know?
And then Robert Pattinson, just this past weekend, I guess while he was doing publicity for The Lighthouse, said that he really hopes that this Batman translates to being as frightening on screen as it was or as it is on the page. Did you see that?
No, I didn't hear that.
Yes, he said that he's hoping that it's going to be a frightening Batman.
Oh.
I don't have high hopes for this Batman, to be completely honest. I don't think Robert Pattinson is a good actor.
Oh, really? You don't think you didn't see Good Time yet?
No, I don't think he's a good actor at all. And so I when he was casted, it was like when they cast Ben Affleck. I was confused. I was like, why?
I was a little confused.
I feel like whoever, I don't know if it's the same production company that did the Ben Affleck Batman, but I just feel like they insist on like running it into the ground or like just with bad casting. I don't know. But also Christian Bale did such an amazing job that it's really hard to think that anyone else can like fill his shoes,
right?
In that
those Christopher Nolan movies were like epic.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. So I'm just like,
interesting.
Boom. Are you judging Robert Pattinson based solely on Twilight or on some work?
No, I haven't seen anything of his that I thought was good.
Wow, you gotta
fair enough.
You gotta watch Good Time. Oh my god, if you haven't watched that. And then I forgot, Tom, you saw The Lighthouse. You're the only one I think
I did.
I know you didn't love the movie. Was he good or no?
You're the only one I could think who actually watched that movie.
Tom, you're the only one in the whole world.
No, it actually did well this weekend. It did well at the box office, believe it or not. Yeah.
Sure.
I did not like The Lighthouse, but I do think that Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson both put their heart and soul into it. Yeah. I can't take that away from them.
Totally. Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm intrigued, but I hear you, Foom. But Tom, I didn't know that it's supposed to also be kind of scary. I love that idea to really, I mean, Batman is dark, you know, even like the comics and like the whole story and Gotham and these creepy alleys. I mean, let's be dark, you know, and Christopher Nolan's movies did get pretty dark at times, which I think is why they're so beloved, you know? So cool. I'm into it, and I think Paul Dano is playing the Riddler, so that is going to be super interesting. So I'm here for it. I think this is interesting. We'll see how it goes.
And you got any new news?
Okay, let's get into.
You like that new news?
I like that hashtag new news. Speaking of kind of reboot, sequel, whatever you want to call it, it's been announced officially. Finally, we've been wondering about it for years and years, and now the Hocus Pocus sequel is officially in the works at Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. It would be streaming. It would not be theatrical like the original movie that everyone loves. Which it's funny because even though everyone loves, of course, Hocus Pocus. I actually was rewatching it today while cleaning on Freeform. Thank you, Freeform. The movie, when it came out in August of 1993, was a major bomb. It was not a success in any way. And then it only became successful later on home video and everything. So it's interesting. They're going to do it on streaming, Disney Plus. And I'm blanking on the writer's name, but she's also an actress, a comedian. She is writing the script. And so I wonder, what do you guys think? You think the three original ladies will come back, all of them?
Well, go ahead. You go first for me.
Because I think that actually all of them have like a soft spot for this film. Like totally. They all really enjoy the fact that it's a cult classic and people love it and everybody gets really excited about it every year for Halloween. So I think we'll definitely see, you know, them in guest spots, but I don't think like...
Not like leads.
No, not main cast.
What do you think, Tom? Because I saw what you were doing this weekend on Facebook and I need to know more.
Okay, so I actually last night, as of this recording, the night prior, I attended a screening of Hocus Pocus in Morristown, New Jersey, at a little theater called the Mayo Performing Arts Theater.
Okay.
And Kathy Najimy was the special guest, and she did a live hour-long Q&A before they screened the film. Yeah, she's fantastic. Love her, love her, love her. She needs to get more work.
Yes.
I actually never realized that she voiced Peggy Hill on King of
the
Hill.
Oh, yeah,
Tom. Seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
She's got moolah.
Yeah, I was going to say, she got money, honey.
Uh-huh. She has a lot of voice work,
Yep. At the end of her Q&A, kids lined up to a microphone and they asked questions, and a little girl dressed as Sarah Jessica Parker's character said, "So are you going to be in the sequel?" And everybody in the theater was like, "Oh!" And she started laughing and she said, "Well, I guess the news has broken." And everybody laughed again, and we're like, yeah. She's like, you know, I don't have an offer yet. She said, but Bet has been knocking on Mr. Disney's door for years, saying that she wants to do a sequel. She said, I'm here, but somebody's got to tell me when and where we're going to film this darn thing. Mm. And she said, you know, if I had to make a guess, I'm going to say that we're going to be invited back as cameos.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a little bit of a disappointment, I think, in the room as I was reading the room after she said that.
Yeah.
Because I think people are really hoping that it's going to be the three of them. But my guess is it's going to be hardest to get Sarah Jessica back.
You know,
why do you think her?
Do you think that?
I feel like that character is so different from the work that she does today. Because Sarah was a really goofy, idiotic character.
Totally, yes.
She's going to have to just, like, go back and remember what it was like to play that before she was ever famous and before she was, you know, on Sex and the City and Divorce and all
See,
the other
my
films
thing is
that
this.
We've come to know her
we,
for.
People have got to get out of this weird obsession that they're in right now about reboots and wanting to see the same people playing characters that they played 20, 30 years ago. Like, like to your point, Sarah Jessica Parker, Kathy and Jimmy, Bette Midler, they are not the people that they were when they starred in this movie that long ago. Seeing them in a cameo role, I think, is fun, but to expect them to be, like, devoting their time and energy to playing a role as a main cast is ridiculous, and it's not going to feel the same. You're going to watch it, and you're not going to feel. It's not going to feel like fun.
The magic is going to be gone.
Yeah, it's going to be like, what is this? Why are these old people playing this role? It's ridiculous. It's like beyond absurd. So I think that being in a cameo is totally acceptable. I think that people would love that, but to expect these women who have come so far in their careers to like want to go back and be like. Like, kind of, like you said, like, these weird, silly, idiotic... Because Kathy and Jimmy played a freaking idiot, too. Like, her character was...
Yes, they all did, really.
To expect these women to go back and do that is just a little odd to me.
Oh, interesting. See, I actually think Sarah Jessica Parker will do it because they all are very smart women, and they know that this... I mean, people love these characters.
They're gonna
ride
the wave.
You know? And also, keep in mind, Sarah Jessica Parker was... desperate for that Sex and the City 3 movie that we've discussed on the show, and that ain't happening because of Kim Cattrall. So she might be like, hey, well, maybe this is my calling to go back and make another movie of something that is super beloved and actually probably more beloved than Sex and the City because Hocus Pocus is for all ages. So, yeah, I mean, but I agree. I think at the very least we should get cameos. Hopefully all three are on board for cameos, but I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for at least some like good supporting... roles, because what's Hocus Pocus without the three Sanderson sisters? I don't want to see any other
new
sisters.
Sanderson sisters.
Right?
You know, like...
You know, I feel like the movie could be so much more exciting and new if you give new actors an opportunity to, you know, fill in this role and see what they can do to it.
So then would you, Foom, do like a prequel or something? Like maybe them when they were younger or something? Or there's Sanderson relatives?
How is Disney doing this? Is this a reboot? Is this like
there's
a remake?
There's not a lot known. They're saying it's a sequel.
Yeah, they're saying it's a sequel. Uh-huh. And I believe Disney did...
And it's a movie, not a series.
Right.
So.
And Disney did a couple years ago, I saw it at Barnes & Noble one time, did do like a Disney book... sequel, like a story, I guess, with like kids, you know, same thing, like, but a group of diverse kids kind of reigniting the witches to come back to life. So
yeah, I think that could be cool. I think it could be something where you have a new character who, you know, unbeknownst to them, or maybe they do it on purpose, redo this spell to bring up these witches, these new witches that come out, and then somewhere along the adventure of the film, they run into the original Sander sisters.
That could be cool. Totally.
And maybe the Sanders sisters are trapped somewhere that they can't get out, but, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Either way, you can have so many different theories. I don't know. I'm into it. I'm excited about it. I know Thora Birch ain't coming back because she's kind of crazy, and her dad, like, killed her career. So, sorry, Thora. She was a little girl.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. She then, you know, remember she went on to do American Beauty, but, like, after that, like, not much, very few small films, and it was...
And now she's on The Walking Dead.
Oh, wait, Thora Birch is on The Walking Dead?
Yeah, she's like alpha or beta. She's like a major villain right now.
I think you're thinking Samantha Morton?
No, Thora Birch is on it too.
Oh, what?
Yeah. She's either Alpha or Beta, and Samantha Morton's the other one.
Well, good for her. Yeah. Okay. I guess she got work again. Yeah, her dad apparently was a crazy manager of hers that, like, demanded everything. And people were like, I'm not going to work with you. And no one worked with her for a while. So, okay. But hey, Walking Dead. All right.
I didn't know
Well,
that.
That's all I got for news. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Foom, you got some news?
Yeah, I want to talk about, because, you know, I'm the Marvel girl. So I want to talk about Martin Scorsese and Francis Ford Coppola and their hateration towards Marvel movies, calling them not real movies. And I just, like, I don't understand. What is this about? Why do they keep doing this? It's so weird.
And a lot more directors have jumped on the bandwagon, too, since then.
It's like, as directors and creatives, it's like, who are you guys to tell anyone else what cinema is or what creative art is? And they also don't sound like they've actually ever seen any of the movies, which irritates me more, because it's like, why are you passing judgment on something you've never seen? Right. I don't understand what that's about. And it also kind of is a little embarrassing, I think, for them to be such acclaimed and esteemed filmmakers to be saying these things, because they sound silly.
Yeah, it sounds just elitist and like old people are like they're basically old men complaining.
Yes, it's it's like, okay, grandpa, just sit there and, you know,
just look, sit pretty in your rocking chair.
Yeah. I know, it's like, what? Like, what are you even saying?
And did you hear Mike Flanagan, who we all love, again, horror filmmaker, but about to come out with Dr. Sleep? He even used Martin Scorsese, I don't know the exact quote, but he even used Martin Scorsese's quote from the past to shut Martin Scorsese down, that, like, films are our dreams, and, like, there should be no limit, and there should be no, you know, basically no criticism of them, like, every film is worth watching.
Absolutely.
Blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely, it's so weird to me, and it's like, you can have your opinion about not liking the movie, if that's your opinion, that's totally fine, you're entitled to it. But to go as far as to say that they're not real cinema, you just sound ridiculous. Like, utterly absurd.
Yeah, it's absurd.
And especially from coming from Francis Ford Coppola, who, no offense, I know he's obviously made major movies, but what has he made in the last...
Right, where you been, boy? Mm-hmm.
It's just reaching, friend, you're reaching. So...
All right, and I will wrap us up. So awards season is really kicked off now, because the Gotham Awards have been announced. The Gotham Awards are more for indie films, so that kind of gives you your first inkling of what the award season is going to look like. And the best feature nominations were The Farewell, Hustlers, Marriage Story, Uncut Gems, and Waves. And I've been hearing a lot about a lot of those. I've seen The Farewell, I've seen Hustlers, Marriage Story will be coming out on Netflix in December, Uncut Gems I really don't have any interest in, Adam Sandler just bugs me, but then I've really been hearing a lot on Twitter as I've been out there tweeting for Add This To Your List about Waves. That's the movie with Sterling K. Brown that's supposed to chronicle a family over a decade of ups and downs in their life, hence the title Waves, so I'm really excited about that. On the documentary front, Apollo 11 got some love, Midnight Traveler, which is a documentary I've heard a lot about, and One Child Nation also got nominations for Best Doco. What else, guys? Do you guys have any other...
Those are, like, the big
nominations
ones.
Nominations that stood out to you? Yeah.
I have to say, as much as I loved Hustlers, because I really did enjoy that movie, I thought it was fun. I thought I loved the music. I loved the acting. I thought Constance Wu and Jennifer Lopez did great jobs, as well as the supporting cast. I loved Kiki Palmer in it and Lizzo, and it was fun to see Cardi B in there. I'm a little confused about it getting, like, award recognition.
Really?
You guys saw it too, right? Is it just me?
Yeah, I saw it.
I don't get it. I think it was a spectacular film. It was really enjoyable, but I don't think it brought anything, like, new or different to the table. And, like,
interesting.
As much as I love Jennifer Lopez in the movie, it was, I mean, she was basically played, like, a version of Jennifer Lopez, right?
Like, yeah,
like,
I don't know.
Did she put her acting to a stretch, or did she do something super out of the box? I don't get it.
Well, I think we knew she's good. Just for years, she's done, you know, for whatever reason, just not great movies, right? I don't know. I personally thought it was such electricity on the screen that I'm hoping it's in the awards conversation, because at least the movies I've seen this year on the big screen, it's definitely one of the most memorable for me. I don't know. I liked it. You know?
I really liked the film. I had heard the buzz in Toronto right away. People were talking about Jennifer Lopez and how she may get an Oscar nomination.
Like, that
for
is
it.
So strange to me. An Oscar nomination?
Interesting, yeah.
And I feel like the Toronto folks started that buzz, and the film was just kind of riding off that
wave. All you need
now,
is buzz.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. All you need is buzz. I did like J-Lo's performance. It had been so long since I'd seen her in a good movie.
Yes, I think that's what's helping her case, is that, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah. For a while, in movies for the last 10 years, they've been maybe fun movies, but they're nothing to think twice about, you know?
Right.
So.
Right. And this is the first time that she's doing something like that. And then, of course, you know, the fact that she's a mother of, how old are her kids now? Probably, what, tweens or teenagers? She's playing a stripper and kind of bearing a lot of her body on there on
that,
screen.
See, that
I don't
to
know,
me
maybe.
Is not, like, Jennifer Lopez has an amazing body. We've literally said that from the moment that she, like, started her
career.
Yeah,
she's never been shy
so
about showing
that
it.
That to
right.
me isn't, like, shocking or, I mean, she looked amazing. She looked freaking fantastic, but that to me was not, like, you know, award winning. Like,
yeah,
you got a great body, girl. You work out. You kick your ass in the gym. Like, we all know that. Yeah. I guess for me, if I'm going to expect her to get anything or any kind of recognition, I guess I could see this movie being a Golden Globe nominee.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because
mm-hmm.
it
exactly.
totally seems like a Golden Globe kind of movie. But anything else, I'm just, like, perplexed. But I did love the movie. I did love it.
And normally, I'm like this with a lot of people. Like, even, like, you know, I think he's great, but, like, Mahershala, and, like, I don't know, sometimes I'm just like, really? Like, what am I missing? Because it's a fine performance, but you're not doing anything that's blowing me away. So, I don't know. I think maybe it's a sign that this year's movies maybe are not the most exciting.
Amazing.
Yeah. You know? But it's cool, Tom, to see some Midsummer love in there, because I know you and I didn't, like, think it was the best thing ever, but I did really like it, and I thought Florence Pugh was awesome in Midsommar.
Yeah, I was happy that she got a Best Actress nomination.
That was some acting, for sure, yeah.
Also happy Awkwafina got a Best Actress nomination for The Farewell, and a lot of people are saying that she's a lock now for Best Actress at the Oscars for a nomination. Not a win, but a nomination.
And
you know, yeah, and I would say, okay, I'm okay with it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That would be good.
Yeah, it was excellent. It's very emotional.
Okay.
You were one of the only people to see that, too.
Yeah, that kind of, you know.
That's how I do. I just be working at the cinema for y'all, for the benefit of y'all. All right, let's get into our list, guys. What do you say?
Yeah.
Me, start us off, girl.
All right, so I have to admit, narrowing it down to two items this week was hard for me because I actually got a chance to see a lot of things. So I'm going to start off though with something that I absolutely adored, which is Modern Love. It's that new series on Amazon.
Wow.
And it's
I second
added
that.
To your list. You guys, this was such a lovely, lovely series. It's 8 episodes, they're 30 minutes each. And I don't know who, I think her name is Kathy or I don't, or Walkie or something, the new head of programming or head of development at Amazon. But girl, you're doing your thing. She's
yeah,
because
I was
going
to say,
amazing... Foom,
you are not an Amazon lover.
I know. You guys know that I'm not. Everyone
Whoa.
Who listens to this.
And now there's this.
Yeah, everyone who listens to this podcast knows that I'm not. But they are not messing around with their new content. So Modern Love is basically this anthology series. It is, they take essays from the Modern Love column in the New York Times.
Oh.
So these are real stories by real people who have actually, like, you know, written in and contributed to this column. And they take these stories and they develop it. And they developed it into these 8 episodes. And so each episode is different. You follow a different couple, a different scenario, a different situation. And I got about halfway through this series, but without a doubt, the standout episode was the one with Anne Hathaway. Mm. And it's called Take Me As I Am, Whoever I Am. And her story is about a woman who is looking for love, but she is bipolar. Oh. And it was done in such an interesting, funny, beautiful way. There was even some music in there. And I think that regardless of how we like to make fun of Anne Hathaway and her, like, her personality and how she so desperately wants to be, like, acclaimed, you got to give it to her. The girl can act. And she made me laugh. She made me cry. Just following this, her and this character of someone who wants to be loved and wants to be in love and also wants to be able to just survive in this world, and she can't because her illness is so debilitating for her, is really was really fascinating to watch. So I loved that one, and I also loved the one with Dev Patel.
Dev
Patel and Catherine
Keener. He's great. And I love Catherine.
That was a great one, too. And so that essay was based off of, I think one of the guys, Bumble or whoever, created one of the dating apps, or maybe it was Tinder, about his real story, his real life story on how he ended up getting with his wife. And then just the juxtaposition of his story and then also the person who was interviewing him, her love story, was so great too. And what I liked about this show is that even though it's called Modern Love, you just automatically assume that all of the episodes are going to follow the same formula. You're going to follow people who are in love, but then something happens and then they break up, but then they get back together again. Like, that's what you would expect for this show, but that's not it at all. It showcases love in all different forms, all different shapes, all different scenarios and situations. And, you know, some of it is about intimate love and some of it isn't. And it was just really, and it's also about lost love. So I thought it was great. Great show. My only criticism is that there is no, out of all the 8 episodes, not one episode features like an Asian woman, a black woman.
Yeah, I was just thinking that.
Or like a Hispanic woman. So I did not like that.
All the women are white.
All of them are white, or the only people of color are like men. And I thought that was very strange for this being just in any way, shape, or form, because all people have love. And so I didn't like that at all.
Yeah. I also, I really appreciated that there was one episode with 2 gay men, but I was really surprised that they didn't do lesbians.
Yeah.
Or transgender. Yeah. And I should say I've only seen 4 episodes of the 8, so maybe they do, but I'm pretty familiar with what the synopses are for the rest of the episodes coming up, and I don't think that that's the case, so.
Nope. But it was great to see Andrew Scott in it, because he's one of the gay couples. So it was
He's hot. Oh, my God.
Wait, how do I know him? Who's that?
He's from Fleabag. He's the priest.
Oh, great. Okay, that's exciting. Okay, cool. Yeah. So, because I had to be honest, I didn't find any of this interesting, like, at all.
Definitely should watch it. It's a great, great series. All right. So, Amazon season 2, because it's already been picked up for season 2. So let's get some other people up in this show, please. And so that's Modern Love. And then my next pick is a series that I really liked as well. And it's called Watchmen, and it's on HBO.
Yeah, I'm excited for this.
It follows a comic. So obviously you guys knew I was totally down for it
Foom?
No, I was not familiar with the comics at all. So I
own it. It's brilliant.
Totally blind, which I loved.
Oh, you didn't even see the Zack Snyder movie? You hadn't seen the movie
from a few years?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't think I had, no. I went into it totally blind. I did not know what this was about at all. I just knew that it started Gina King and they were dressing up and had masks and they were going to do some action. And I was like, okay, what is this show? Let me check it out. Yeah. So it takes place in an alternate reality. Same like time period as we are now, but it's in this world where cops have to dress up and cover their face because there are cop killers out there. And there are white supremacists who have like waged war against the police, and they're the ones who are trying to kill them. So the Watchmen are the police, and they have to basically be covered. And it stars Regina King, who I absolutely adore and love, and I'm just obsessed with everything that she does. I don't want to give too much away, because I really think part of the fun of this is kind of just like really experiencing and watching this show. I think that the way it started off was utterly brilliant because it starts off with a actual historical moment that happened in the United States in terms of violence against blacks in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Oh. If you guys aren't familiar with the Tulsa riots, you should look it up and be familiar with it. And it's quite devastating to watch, quite frankly. It's pretty jarring to see, and it was pretty graphic the way to start off this series. But I think it sets the tone for what this show is and its unapologeticness of like addressing race relations in the United States. So I am so here for this show. Sign me up. That this show had me in the first literally like 5 minutes of watching. Cool. I cannot wait to see what this series has in store. And I feel like HBO was like, we lost Game of Thrones, so we're coming at you guys and giving you like the best of the best with Euphoria, and now this, like, HBO is not playing games.
Okay, cool. Yeah, because I was worried. I thought this could really be hit or miss, so it sounds like it's more hit than miss.
Oh, it is a hit. And I just have to say, honorable mention. Oh, wait, go ahead, Mark.
I was going to just ask, and I know you, so you haven't read the comic or seen the movie, but it seems like, is this sort of like a sequel? Can you tell it all? Is this like a, does this continue after that story, or?
What I understand is that this is its own kind of like version of Watchmen. Like, I'm not sure if it's a sequel or not. Like I said, I didn't watch the movie, so I honestly don't really know. But I think it's like
just a different version.
It's a different take on whatever the original comic was.
Okay. Yeah. I'm definitely curious. Yeah.
An honorable mention is, I just have to say it because I don't want it to, I want people to watch it immediately. Dolomite Is My Name. It's this new movie on Netflix. Eddie Murphy is back, y'all. Like,
wait, is this, that already on Netflix?
Yes. This is so unbelievably good. Like, it made me cry at the end of the movie because.
So is it a drama or comedy?
No, it's a comedy. It's a comedy, but like. It's based on a real man, Ray Moore, and I had no idea that he existed, and I have a friend of mine who we constantly talk about, like, black stories and black storytelling, and how I've been craving and I've been wanting, like, black stories that don't have to do with slavery or, like, cop killing or, you know, racism or, you know, pimps and hoes and drug addiction, because like black people are so much more than just that narrative. And this film answers my question. It gives me information about an actual person that I had never known before. It tells me his story, and it makes me laugh, and it makes me cry, and it makes me feel good. It's just like a heartfelt, good movie with elements of comedy in there, and you have to watch it. Like, Eddie Murphy obviously has been gone for like a decade. Like, he's just been like chilling, and you know, who knew that he would be able to resurrect his career in the way that he has. Like, this movie is so far beyond my expectations. It's fantastic. So
cool. Some people think he should get an Oscar nomination.
I absolutely agree, and he should. Like, this movie is so, I think this is going to be one of those movies that are going to surprise people so much that when it comes to like the conversation about the awards, this movie is going to like creep to the top, and people are going to be quite surprised by how it does that, because I think when you watch it and word of mouth, this is like an unexpected film that nobody was asking for and nobody thought could be done. And the fact that it's Eddie Murphy, it's just such a good movie. Such a good movie.
I had no idea it's already out on Netflix. I mean, Netflix does not promote their shit. Wow. I had no idea. I heard about it, but I had no idea it was already. When did it come out? Like, this past weekend?
Well, now you know, Mark.
Wow. I'm learning from my own podcast, y'all. That's awesome. I can't wait. Yeah, I've heard a lot about that. So that's cool. Nice.
Mark, what do you got?
Okay. Well, I got two items this week, and the first one is the big movie that comes out this week. I saw it early, everyone. Terminator Dark Fate.
Oh, boy.
Ooh. Dun, dun, dun.
Here it goes.
I'm excited to hear what you have to say.
As Fumi said at the beginning of the episode, here's another movie about somebody playing a character they played 30 years ago.
Totally, right? Exactly. This is the theme. You can't get rid of them. So as you may, I can't speak. As you may know, I am a total fan of the Terminator movies, but I'm not like a diehard fan. So just putting that out there. I'm not going to like know all the terms and all that. I think they're fun. I thought Terminator 2 years ago in 1991 was probably one of the best sequels ever. I mean, the CGI, the drama brought me to tears, the action, everything. So what's so exciting about the new Terminator, Terminator Dark Fate, it brings back not only Arnold, who's basically in all of them, but it brings back James Cameron is producing. So this is the first one that he's been involved with since 1991, which is pretty incredible. And of course, it brings back our lead actress, our crazy, insane, tough woman, Linda Hamilton, as Sarah Connor.
With a lot of aging makeup.
Oh, I don't know if that's makeup, Tom.
Does she really look that rough?
I mean, she is older, and she didn't... Ouch. How do I say it? She's never really been the most beautiful woman in the world, but, oh, yeah, Tom, I don't know. I don't know if that's makeup.
Okay.
I'm sure they may be...
I know in Halloween, Jamie Lee didn't really look as bad as she looks in the 2018 version.
Yes.
They put a lot of makeup on her, so I thought they did the same.
Maybe they did. I don't know. It's hard to tell because Linda Hamilton has not really acted in quite a while. I have a feeling she just kind of lives in the woods and, you know, just hangs out like in a cabin and smokes a lot of pot. But she is back. And guys, I don't want to give much away, but she is not only back, like, she's back with a vengeance, and this is no cameo, ladies and gentlemen. Linda Hamilton is, like, front and center, much like Jamie Lee was in Halloween. So it's very cool to see these tough, you know, final girls in these movies. Like, they are kicking ass. I mean, Sarah Connor, Linda Hamilton, I mean, she is a badass bitch, and it's awesome to see. So, just a little bit of story. So we have her come back. We have Arnold, of course, is back. But the rest of everyone else is pretty new. We have, oh my God, of course, now that I'm talking about it, I'm blanking on her name. But Mackenzie something, this actress who is great. She's brilliant. She's been in a lot of things lately. Mackenzie, I'm going to come back to her. But she plays kind of the new... hero, the new kind of young version of the heroine, Mackenzie Davis. She's been in like Halt and Catch Fire and Blade Runner 2049. She's a human / robot, like cyborg, you know, combo. And so she's...
Hybrid.
Yes, a hybrid. Thank you, Tom. She's been sent back from the future to protect this Hispanic woman. Half the cast is Hispanic. It takes place at the border. Oh, yeah. It's very interesting. It takes place at the border. Most of the action in the beginning, the first half, is in Mexico, and they need to cross the border to kind of find help from some familiar faces for the future. The main bad guy this time is a Hispanic actor named Gabriel Luna, who is tough and crazy and insane. And I mean, there's a lot of violence, of course, it's Terminator. But so Mackenzie Davis plays Grace, who is like the good robot, and she is trying to protect this lead character, Danny, played by Natalia Reyes, and then the bad Terminator is trying to kill her, because we find out, as is common in these movies, that Danny will do something in the future that, you know, is good for humans, bad for robots, and so the robots want to kill her. And so they come into contact with Linda Hamilton, and there the adventure begins. Linda kind of shows them the ropes. She's been through this twice before. And so even though Sarah Connor is a human, she's not a robot, she knows obviously a lot about them. It's very fun when she and Arnold are in scenes together. So once you get there, you'll have a good time with that. Like I said, it's definitely, of course, a drama. There's some big, you know, there are always some big concepts in the Terminator movies, you know, choosing your own fate and, you know, alternating timelines and doing the right thing. But there's a lot of really good comedy to just shake things up, a lot of relief that way. I had a great time. I think there maybe are some plot holes, but honestly, guys, it kind of goes over my head because Terminator is full of holes because they're going back and forth and making their own continuity. So I'm sure diehards out there might find something at fault. I had a good time. And the ending, I really wasn't sure who was going to survive or not. It's a major showdown. So I think it's cool. And like I said, it takes place at the border. I mean, there are scenes at like the detention centers, you know, at the wall, at the fences, which is really interesting.
Is there a political message?
Yeah, I think so. To be honest, that kind of went a little over my head because it wasn't very obvious.
Okay.
Because I was just sort of trying to follow the actual plot of this sci-fi story. And then later I was like, so yeah, what were they trying to say with that? I'm sure they're trying to say something. It wasn't very obvious for me personally. Maybe out there everyone's like, duh, Mark. But either way, it was just a really cool setting for sure. Because it's set in modern day. It's like 2019, 2020 at the Mexican-American border. So there's it's just a cool new lens to see this story continue. And I recommend it. I'd say add it to your list. I think if you are remotely interested in the Terminator films or in sci-fi technical stuff,
yeah,
give it a watch. I think it's cool. And the CGI, some of the CGI is obviously just so impressive. So check it out. But I do recommend if you have not seen Terminator 2, you gotta watch it. Not only because that's like one of the best films ever, but whoa, this movie in the first 2 minutes, I mean, changes things up from Terminator 2. That's all I'll say.
Okay.
And then my other item is, like Tom said, even though we made our spooky list, we're still feeling the little Halloween spirit because at least as of this recording, it's not Halloween just yet. Everyone, you have to add to your list a fun album called Turn Off the Light by Kim Petras. Let me tell you all about this album. So, if you remember, when I talked about the Charlie XCX album not that long ago, I mentioned that Kim is on that album with her. So, Kim Petras is, I think she's German. She's a trans singer, pop, dance, a little like gothy pop. It's really funky stuff she does. Turn Off the Light, Volume 1, which was the first half of the album, that came out last year, this time last year, October 2018. And it's all songs that are like fun Halloween dance songs. And then I'm telling you, blast it on Halloween night, whether you're going out or not. It'll get you in the funky rave spirit. But basically, I want to focus on the new half because now the full album is out. Turn Off the Light. You'll see when you look it up on Spotify or whatever that half of the album are the same songs from last year. But there's a new half that I am loving. And some of the songs are named after movies like There Will Be Blood, Bloody Valentine, from my Bloody Valentine, Valentine, Wrong Turn, which I just watched on TV today. There's a song called Knives. There's a song called Demons that I can't stop listening to. It makes me think of Nine Inch Nails. Like, it's just some funky, crazy, good beats.
How did you find out about this?
Well, Greg had played it for me, and I had known about Kim Petras because at least in the like gay world, I feel like she's really taking things over by storm. She's a total dance techno thing, so I understand if like that's not really your cup of tea, but at least give some of these songs a listen. Wrong Turn is really fun. Knives literally is a dance beat, and then you just keep hearing like the swishing of knives. It's kind of weird, but I'm into it. So definitely check out Turn Off the Light by Kim Petras. I think it's a fun thing. I might even blast it out my window with the trick-or-treaters walking by. I'll be like, hey, everyone, welcome to my party. Come get your candy. Right? And there's even a song. This is on the album, but again, it was from last year, technically. So it's not new, but it's called Transylvania. And of course, the letters trans are in all caps. So, hey. So think of it as your Halloween horror with a LGBTQ spin on it.
All right.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I will wrap us up. I'm going to switch things up at the very last minute, y'all.
What?
Not to throw y'all off, but and the reason why I decided to do this is because Fumi said I think HBO is bringing it with Euphoria and now Watchmen, right? Kind of turning their programming around. First thing on my list that I'm switching up, I'm going to talk about, and I know I've talked about seasons 1 and 2. I didn't want to do this at the risk of being too boring, but season 3 of The Deuce, which is the final season, is so damn good that I'm going to talk about it now. And Fumi, you need to include The Deuce in with this whole new wave of programming on HBO, because season 3 is so good that I am going to say The Deuce is one of the best shows on television ever.
Really?
Wow. Interesting.
Yes.
But is Mr. Problematic still involved?
Yeah, he is, unfortunately, and he still has a very, very big role because he plays twin brothers.
Right.
Yes.
So it's like a double whammy of James Franco.
Yeah.
But guys, this show is good, and now that it's the final season, I'm starting to see where they're going with everything, and kind of understanding what the message is, and basically it's trying to tell you, it's trying to open people's eyes to the idea that sex work should be normalized and not criminalized, right?
Interesting.
Because that's what happened in the 70s and 80s with the pornography industry, and, you know, I mean, it was rough, and then the police came and cleaned everything up in New York City, but it left all of these people who had gotten so used to making money and making their living on selling their bodies that when there was no opportunity and no work anymore, there was nothing left for them to do. And it's actually really horrible and really sad what happened to a lot of these women that used to work the beat in Times Square in the Deuce. But season three does that in a really poignant way. It's not overly depressing. And it does give, you know, it shines a light on the revitalization of New York City as a result of the porn industry being cleaned up. And it's just... It's a good show, y'all, and it covers the AIDS crisis in season three because it goes into the 1980s.
How many episodes?
So a lot of that is really
interesting.
Season three is 8 episodes, okay. Just like the past 2 seasons have been. They're all an hour each. But Fumi, I actually think you'd like it a lot. Did you like The Wire?
I actually watched the first. I don't know if I finished out the first season of The Deuce, but I did watch a couple episodes, and I liked it. I thought that even though James Franco was, I guess, a main cast member, I actually thought Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Show.
Was the one. She was a standout for me. She was the one that I was really interested in
Absolutely.
Watching her character.
She's excellent.
Yeah. So absolutely. I might go back and finish out season one and then watch season two and three. Yeah,
I would highly recommend it. And like I said, if you guys remember that I talked about at the end of season one, something so jarring happening to one of the main characters in that season again on episode 7 of The Deuce. The final episode premieres tomorrow night as of this recording. So there's still one more episode to go in this final season. We've seen 7. And something so shocking happened at the end of last episode that I literally had to get up and, like, pace around my home and just take a few deep breaths because I did not see that coming and I felt so badly about it.
Wow.
So you get really, really invested in these characters and you're hoping that they're all going to get a happy ending. Not all of them do. Hopefully some of them end up with something good happening to them. So I'm here for season 3 and I'm actually really sad to see the show go.
Wow.
But I think 3 seasons was probably a perfect amount.
Okay. Hmm. I was going to ask you if you thought that 3 seasons was good or do you think it was forced to end because of James Franco early?
I think they probably had to speed it up a little bit. But if you think about it, right, the show started in the late 70s and it's wrapping up in the 80s. How many seasons can you really do with such a short period of time when you're basing it on real life, right?
Yeah.
So 3 seasons is perfect. So that's The Deuce season 3.
Cool.
Second thing on my list I'm going to talk about is Wounds.
Oh, yes.
That is the Hulu movie. Mm-hmm. Well, Hulu in the U.S. and Netflix internationally.
Mm-hmm.
That's the movie starring Armie Hammer and Dakota Johnson. And you guys know I love Armie Hammer. Fell in love with him in Call Me By Your Name and have been obsessed ever since.
He's a cute one.
He's
a cutie.
And it's funny. They're both going to be in the sequel together, which is so funny. Dakota
Call
and
Me
Armie.
By Your
right.
Name?
Call Me By Your Name. Yeah, whenever they decide to make it.
Yeah, Dakota's playing his wife.
Mm-hmm. Oh, how funny.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So these two play a couple in this movie, Wounds. It's a horror movie, and it's basically about a bartender in New Orleans named Will. He's a loser. He's kind of a deadbeat. He's working his bartending job, and his girlfriend is going to school trying to get a PhD or something or other and make something of her life, and he's kind of just like, I'll do something whenever I feel like I'm going to do something. And one night, a bunch of kids come into the bar and a fight breaks out because there's alcohol involved and it's New Orleans, of course. And one of the kids leaves a cell phone. So Will picks it up and brings it home and he watches a couple of videos on the phone. And I don't want to give anything away, but the videos are fucked up.
Oh, my God.
All belief.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then some crazy shit starts happening to him and his girlfriend. Right. So that's the plot.
I can't wait to hear what you have to say because I know
did
when
we
I
all watch
we
it?
All watched it, so I know. I
okay.
Can't.
Oh, we all did. Okay,
yeah,
this is
yeah. I feel like we all think different things.
For me, guys, I'm gonna say it's an okay to miss.
Oh,
Wait, okay. Yep. Okay, Mark, what is yours?
I gotta tell you guys, it is weird, and I don't know if I really get it, but I was into it, and I had a little bit of nightmares because of it. It's very freaky, so I would say, you know, even though nightmares aren't good, I would say, actually, add it to your list. I can't explain any of it for you, but I think it's worth a watch. What do you think, Foom?
I'm gonna say skip that shit.
Interesting.
Okay. I was like, wow. What the?
So we covered the whole spectrum.
Yeah, we did.
My thoughts after watching that movie was, what a waste of my time.
Interesting. That ending.
And Fumi, that's why I say that it's an okay to miss. Because, Mark, I'm going to agree with you. Mm. I was totally entranced and, like, engrossed in
those
it.
Those videos and
throughout the whole
and
movie,
images.
There's, like, this slight hum.
Yes.
Right? There's like, this constant hum throughout the whole movie that builds such tension. And the way that it's shot, it's like you're always dreading whatever's going to come next. Yeah. The videos are really creepy.
Oh, my gosh. And the
you're
images
that
he's seeing
be,
in his mind,
yes,
the quick
and
cuts.
The images in his head. But then at the end, like, it just takes a left turn. And, like, you know what I feel, guys? I feel like the movie suffered in editing. There is no way the screenplay could have been that plot holey. Right? I mean, it just, there's no way that screenplay could have been that incomplete and that somebody gave the green light.
I agree with you, Tom. I think they just cut shit out. Armie Hammer, Dakota Fanning, Zazie Beetz involved in a film like that.
Oh, right. Zazie Beetz, too. Yeah,
I
yeah.
think that you definitely, the script was probably amazing. And it probably did suffer a lot in editing. For me, I just was like, I thought the movie was, like, really gross. I do agree with you guys that there were jarring things that, you know, you see that made it scary, but it was weird, and I didn't get it.
Yeah, I don't really get it.
They didn't explain, like, where the, like, what is the origin of these,
yes,
these videos that are apparently plaguing a bunch of people on their cell phones, and then, like, it doesn't make sense, like, why is Dakota Fanning suffering?
But he's not.
Dakota Johnson.
But he's not, like, right, like, she's, like, really going through it, and she didn't watch nearly the videos the way he did, and she's not, like, going crazy and getting angry the way he is. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
don't want to give it away, but I didn't really understand the whole thing of like, wounds, and, like, then when he was, like, you know, having his
totally
own physical issues that then didn't really go anywhere. Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, guys, the movie's about decay, right? It's about, like, that's why there's bugs everywhere.
Ugh,
it's about infestation and how, like, you can let bad things infest your soul and your personality, and you can become a really bad person if you don't deal with things in your life. I guess that's what it's trying to say.
I didn't really understand at all the characters of, what's her name, Zazie Beetz and her boyfriend.
Yeah.
I felt like
what was
that
their purpose?
Like, what was their purpose, guys?
Right.
That was
I get
weird.
Her
I know
purpose. I didn't get the boyfriend's because, like, you know, and then it's like, but then even that didn't go anywhere because she ends it, and then it just ends. I know it's based on
a short story, which the movie does kind of feel like it's a short story, which is weird how it does translate. I don't know. I kind of liked it, but I do have to say, the filmmaker, Babak something, he did Under the Shadow, which is brilliant, really freaky movie, which is far better. He's definitely talented, but you're right. Maybe in post, executives or distributors, Hulu, I don't know who, someone was playing around and warped it a bit, but it's at least unique. I mean, I don't know if I've really seen anything like that. That was strange. Yeah.
So that's Boons. Mm-hmm. And that's our list for the week. So let's add it up real quickly before we wrap everything up. We had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 ads and 1 okay to miss. Mm-hmm. Fumi added Watchmen, Modern Love, and Dolomite Is My Name. Mark added Terminator Dark Fate and Kim Petras' new album Turn Off the Lights. I added The Deuce Season 3, and then I said it's okay to Womp Womp, Sorry Army, This Pains Me, but Wounds is okay to miss.
Wow, Sorry Army. And Army looked rough in that movie, which it's hard to make him look rough.
I mean, he looked rough in a good way to me.
God,
okay.
Ugh, literally, he's covered in sweat and spit and alcohol,
he
and
disgusting.
And Tom's like, "Oh, hi."
I was like, "Hey, boy, what you doing later when you get off?" All right. So let's wrap it up, guys, with a little discussion about true horror, right? And that'll kind of bring our whole little Halloween segment to a close. Let's talk about stories that you have noticed, real life horrifying stories, whether it's true crime or just something creepy or spooky or scary that happened.
Yep.
That you think might make for good TV or movies. Fumi, let's start with you.
Okay, so I really wanted to go with Donald Trump's presidency, but I'm not gonna...
Ryan Murphy beat you to that.
But I'm not gonna. No, so I'm actually picking a story that... is really actually pretty new. I don't know if you guys heard about...
Yeah, totally current
the
events.
Dutch family that I guess had been in... hiding in a house in a secret room waiting for the end of time
for like decades, a very long time.
Like
some of these people didn't even know that there were other people.
Yeah, it's actually a really bizarre story. It's a super bizarre story. So it was a man who's 58 and he had six kids all around the ages of like 18 and 25. And they had been living in this house in this room. And the only reason why anyone even knew that this family was there is because one of the sons ended up escaping and like going to a local pub and basically saying like him and his siblings and his father had been locked in a room for decades. It's still pretty new, in terms of news. So there's new information getting out every day. But essentially, these people, I guess at the behest of the father, mother is not, known. So he might have killed her. Who knows? Took his kids and put them in like this bunker to wait out the end of days. And unbeknownst to, the kids, and I don't even know about the father, or maybe he's mentally ill, or maybe he was trying to kill his family. The end of days has not arrived yet, as we all are aware. We're all here.
Are we sure?
You know, well, that's true. Maybe it's happening right now. It came out a little too early. But yeah, so this story is real. It happened in the Netherlands. This is about a Dutch family. So I think that this could be a fantastic horror movie. Like once it's all said and done and really we start to understand like what the story is, like in my mind it's this picturesque family who one day like you start to follow the decay of the mind of the father and like he murders the mom and then locks his kids in this bunker in this room and just never lets them out, and then we just kind of show the kids or maybe the oldest trying to figure out how to like kill the dad to get him and his siblings to escape.
Yeah, totally.
I think it would be a really interesting horror movie.
Would you keep it in the Netherlands film or would you bring it to the US?
You know, maybe I would bring it to the US, but maybe put it in like a really obscure part of the States. Maybe it's like a farmland where in like a farmhouse type family or something.
Like Montana or something.
Yeah, like where a lot of open space, definitely not in a city in any way. On farmland. I think it could be really cool. So that's my story. That's mine.
Wow, jeez.
Yeah, Mark,
you've
look
been
into
heard about
it.
This,
it's
Mark?
Crazy.
No, I haven't, but I've been like so chaotically busy. I don't know anything about news, so wow. Okay, I have some reading to do on my flight tomorrow. Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There you go. What do you got, Boo?
So I have a story that always kind of freaked me out just because of the timing of everything. I don't know necessarily if this would make like a good movie or show episode, but I mean, it could always be part of a larger story about just kind of insane things that happen in Hollywood. So years ago, I had heard about this. And I wanted to tell you guys about it in case you didn't know. But there was an actress named Dominique Dunn, who maybe most famously was in the first Poltergeist. Mm-hmm. Now, she was a role that you kind of actually forget about because she's not in it as much as the rest of the family. But she played the oldest sister in Poltergeist.
Dana.
Yes. Good memory. Dana.
Okay.
Dark hair, pretty girl. She was very young in her like early 20s at the time, I think. And so in the early 80s, Poltergeist came out in 1982, in June of 1982. And on October 30th, 1982, she was killed.
Mm-hmm.
Which the timing just freaks me out. Halloween, just a couple months after this massive success in her career. And she was killed by her boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
This very very unhealthy relationship. Her boyfriend was John Sweeney, who was a chef. They were only together maybe a year.
He was abusive.
Yes, very abusive, very tumultuous relationship. She would, like, go to set on various, you know, jobs after shooting Poltergeist, various TV shows, and, like, would have bruises all over her body. So I just thought it was so freaky that, like, here's such a celebratory time for this young actress, and this big movie's out, and, I mean, it got, like, Oscar noms. Like, Poltergeist was huge. And you kind of forget that, like, oh, yeah, in Poltergeist 2 and 3, like, you see, like, the brother, at least in Poltergeist 2, but we don't even really talk about the older sister. I think they just say, like, oh, she's in college or whatever. No, in real life, like, she died. You know, the guy strangled her the night before Halloween while she had a friend at her house. They were rehearsing for an appearance on that TV show V, and he was the one that called the cops, and he even called a friend saying, if you find out that I'm dead, John Sweeney is the killer. He's here right now. They're fighting outside. I'm getting out of here. Like, how freaky is that shit? So, total abusive relationship at a time when this young actress was about to, like, ride the wave of her life, probably. So,
well, Mark, it's so interesting that you say that. Maybe this wouldn't be a good enough standalone TV miniseries or movie, but part of something bigger.
Yeah.
Maybe you make a miniseries about how all of Poltergeist seem to be plagued.
Yeah. Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Tom.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, Catalana's dead. Mm-hmm. Tangina died of something tragic.
Yep.
And
isn't there, like, only one person
on
from that movie that's still alive?
No, I think, I know Joe Beth Williams.
Well, Craig T. Nelson and Joe Beth
Those
Williams,
two are
right?
still definitely alive. And I don't think the brother... I don't know about the brother. I think he's alive, I hope. God, that's scary. But yeah, you know what's...
But, like, yeah, everybody else.
It's freaky, because, yeah, she was buried in the same cemetery where a few years later the actress that played Carol Ann would be buried. So, yeah, I don't know what's up with that curse, but there's something up with that cast, yeah.
It was an issue Hollywood story, so I think it definitely could, like, become, like, a bigger...
Oh, yeah.
A bigger
thing where maybe it's just inspiration for, like, a cast, a family of characters that is working on something, and then, like, one by one, there's, like, something, you know.
Totally.
You can obviously, you'd have to make it a little more fun. I know it's kind of terrible because it's such a serious story, but, yeah, there's something there. I just always thought that was so spooky. Like, right before Halloween, the year of the biggest thing in your life... Oh, my God, so young. Yeah, freaked me out. But, yeah, I watched that E! True Hollywood Story.
But
totally.
The sad thing about her death is the guy who did it, he only served 3 years for murdering her.
Absolutely. And he apparently cannot recall what happened. He just remembers them fighting, and then he... Yes, exactly. And then he, like, snapped out of it, and his hands were around her neck, and she was dead, and the cops were there. So it's like, wow.
Wow.
Yeah, total mental health issues, but... Yeah, that's my creepy true story.
Good one, Mark. Well, you and I have a very similar... we went down a very similar path.
Oh, yeah, yes, you're right.
Because I picked an actress as well. Mm. And like you, I'm not sure... I feel like if we were in Britain, it would be a perfect 3-episode miniseries. Because, you know, they have no problem doing, like, short-ass things.
Yeah.
Here in the States, we would, like, struggle with something like that. Because the story's not meaty enough to do, like, a whole, you know, 8, 9, 10-episode miniseries. But something short and sweet. Definitely. So if you guys aren't familiar, Adrienne Shelley, mm-hmm. she was an actress and director and screenwriter, and you'd probably know her most because she co-starred in, wrote, and directed Waitress.
Yes, which now is
a Carrie Russell movie, right?
Hit major Broadway show now. So, yeah.
Yep. Well, on November 1st, 2006, a year before Waitress actually came out, so again, creepy timing,
yes.
Mark, right? Day after Halloween. Her mm-hmm. husband found her hanging in the shower of her Greenwich Village work studio apartment. And it looked like there was no foul play, nothing like that. So the police initially, they ruled it a suicide. And her husband kept pushing and saying, no, there is no way she would take her own life. Trust me. Like, please look into this. Reopen the case. Look at it again. Look at it again. He pestered and pestered and pestered. The police ended up going back to see if they could find anything from the crime scene, and they found a suspicious footprint that didn't match the footprint of Adrienne Shelley. So they looked into it, and they found out that a construction worker who was doing work on the building actually murdered her and then staged it to look like a suicide. And the guy confessed to the police on tape to doing it, and it turns out that she was trying to work and he was doing some work, and it was loud, and she came out and said something like, can you please stop, or can you stop the noise? He threw a hammer at her and killed her, and then staged it to look like a suicide, and he was afraid that if he called the police, he would be deported because he was an immigrant. So there's some, like, timeliness to that, too, and I just think it's kind of eerie and creepy and interesting because she kind of was somebody who seemed like she was going to be going somewhere. So a life cut short and very sad.
And it was extra creepy because I think technically it was on Halloween night, right? But it just happened after midnight. Is that right? It was November 1st, but it was Halloween night, which, again,
and then in a city, too. Like,
I remember
something like this happening in the suburbs or somewhere rural. It's like, okay. But, like, literally people in buildings right next to her and apartments right next to her were home while she was literally being murdered, and somebody was stringing her up on a shower rod to make it look like she hung herself. So totally spooky.
I was super freaked out by that story. Yeah, when I remember, because that was my first, that was when I moved to New York. I moved in, like, August of 2006. So hearing that story, I was like, oh, shit. Oh, yeah. This happened, like, 2 months later. Yeah. Super spooky. Very sad. Yeah. And I forgot it was so soon before Waitress opened. Yep. Yeah.
Totally.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I think that's our episode. Good one, guys. We had a lot of fun. Yeah. Hope you listeners did as well. Be sure to do the usual. Check us out on social. We are on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Be sure to rate us. Please, please, please give us ratings on iTunes. We love 5 stars, and we will shout you out if you do to show you our gratitude and appreciation.
Yes, please.
It's so easy to do it. Do it. And we want to thank Greg, Allie, and Jay, as usual, for their support to this podcast. And we will see you all, or you will hear us all, again in the near future very soon.
That's true. Next up is Apple Plus. I can't believe it's already about to come out. We gotta get our subscription, people.
Apple Plus is like 2 weeks before Disney, right?
They swooped in, and November 1st, so it's gonna be here before we know it, y'all.
So check us out to see what we think.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye, y'all.